overtures to me are wasted time. Mm-hmm. And unless it's an overture where you're like, if there's a story being told in the overture, and I've seen that done with a couple different, you couldn't really do it in this show, but like Superstar, usually everybody stages the overture, sometimes a little too ambitiously. Of course, as I will say again, Andrew Lloyd Webber's overtures are not really overtures. They're just a song without the lyrics from later. But anyway.
I wish you had an opinion about that.
Whenever my world falls apart, I never lose hope or lose heart. Whatever the form of the storm that may brew, not with you to lean on, darlings, you.
Hello and welcome to The Original Cast, a podcast about original cast albums and the people who love them. I'm Patrick Flynn, playwright, filmmaker, and professor of communications at American University. And every show, we invite someone who you'd see in the theater, either on stage, backstage, or in the house, to discuss an original cast album they love. And today we are joined by actress...
Let's just go actress and director.
Actress and director. It's Carrie Ginsburg, everybody.
Hello, everybody. My name is Carrie. What's yours?
Well, good. We'll jump right in. And you're here to discuss. Tell the people.
I am here to discuss Gypsy, a musical fable.
You'll be swell. You'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here.
There's so much to dive into with Gypsy,
yes.
And I don't want to tip my hand too much, so I will just ask you, when did this show come into your life?
So when I was 11 or 12 years old, a community theater in Rockville, Maryland, Rockville Music Theater, it's a great little theater, it's still in operation, did a production of Gypsy. I auditioned for it, and I was cast as Baby Louise. And so to prepare for my time on stage,
right.
My mom and I went out and purchased a copy of the soundtrack, and we had it on audio cassette.
Okay.
We also watched, actually, the Rosalind Russell Gypsy film mm-hmm. that we rented from Errol's Video Store, which was a local video
There's
chain.
A lot of
We're
local
like really throwing
here.
Back All right now to also sort of understand the story outside of the soundtrack.
So you started right away as Baby Louise. So I guess the first question would be, because this is something I've always kind of wondered about all the professional productions of this show with the kids, is how much of this show did you comprehend when you were Baby Louise?
I was a fairly savvy 11-year-old.
Okay.
I'd been doing theater professionally since I was about 6 years old.
Okay, so you were hip.
So I had exposure, but I also came from a fairly traditional household.
Okay.
Manners and morals were very big growing up. It's in it really... doing theater as a child and doing theater in professional theater, you can be exposed to a lot of things. So I had parents mm-hmm. who were really particular about what I was or was not exposed to backstage.
Okay.
So when I had time off stage, I would sit and do my homework or read a book quietly next to my parents. I wasn't running around running amok,
right.
Or getting up to no good. And I also had the opportunity, though, to work in several professional houses in the D.C. area mm-hmm. that they wouldn't have stood for shenanigans from kids.
Well, the professional thing, yeah, mm-hmm. they absolutely won't.
Not at all. So in terms of Gypsy, how much did I understand? Well, I understood the basic story, the basic family story that was happening. But when you get to the burlesque stuff,
mm-hmm.
I don't specifically remember a conversation with my parents about what is burlesque and what does it mean. But mm-hmm. I knew that there was something adult about it.
Yeah.
And I definitely know that there are jokes within Gypsy, even within Sondheim's lyrics, mm-hmm. that I didn't get for years and years and years and years and years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I grew up in an age where Who Framed Roger Rabbit was a movie that we watched mm-hmm. and then aged with. So you don't get all of the jokes,
right?
You don't get patty cake when you're 9.
Right.
But when you're 19, you're like, oh, well, that's a different joke that I laughed at.
But even in your upstanding moral household, you're allowed to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
I was not.
Oh. Dirty Dancing was also a film that we watched sometimes,
oh.
too.
I don't know if we weren't allowed to or I just didn't watch that.
We had traditional values, but my parents certainly didn't shelter us from society, right? You don't want to be that kid in the corner who has no life experience.
Sure. So you're in the show and you get – so we should probably tell everybody – I think a lot of people know Gypsy is a pretty famous show, but what is the story? Let's quickly just sort of go through what the story of Gypsy is.
Well, it spans many, many years. So I guess we should first start by saying that Gypsy the musical is suggested by the memoirs of Gypsy Rose Lee.
Right.
When the play opens, we meet Rose Hovick, Mama Rose, and her two daughters.
You know her real name. Oh, this is going to be great.
Keep going. Gosh. So the play opens with Rose Hovick and her two young daughters, June, who is very young, very blonde, very adorable, very talented, and Louise, who's a little bit older and a little less talented, but she tries really hard, auditioning for a kiddie show. And so we learn very quickly that Mama Rose is sort of a stereotypical stage mom,
Yeah. She is what the stereotype is based on.
I think what's important to say also is that this musical is set at the height of the vaudeville era. And so these two little girls are billed as a vaudeville act. And the musical progresses as Mama Rose fights really hard for baby June to become a star, and baby Louise is pulled along with her. So we move through time, and we see baby Louise grow up into dainty Louise, mm-hmm. and baby June grow up into dainty June. Right. And the act grows with them, but they are still very young. They are treated as babies. They are referred to as babies. So Rose is always there in the wings or sometimes on stage with them during their performances. And what we start to see is Rose's, I'm going to call it love for her children and love for the spotlight starting to deteriorate their family life and interfere with their children's careers. Mm-hmm. So along the way, Rose meets this man, Herbie, who's a candy salesman, who also happens to be a manager of children's acts or has been at one point in his career. And he's a good man and he's good to her kids and he believes in June's talents and he likes a strong woman. And so he and Rose start this very epic decades long relationship. He constantly proposes to Rose. She constantly puts him off, but he's always there on the road with them. Skipping ahead and moving very fast. Oh, so spoiler. Dainty June elopes. The family, Rose, Herbie, and Louise, are actually at a train station waiting to go to the next town when they find out that June has eloped. And so in a moment, Mama Rose says, I have a dream, and it's about you, Louise, and we're going to change the act to be around you. Louise, who her entire life has been told that she's slow and talentless and lesser, and she doesn't shine as bright as June. So now all of a sudden, we go into act two, and the spotlight is on dainty, now just adult Louise. The act changes. Vaudeville is still on the decline. We see Louise trying really, really hard to be a star that she can't be, but her love for her mother and her respect for everything that her mother and Herbie have done for her for so long keeps her trying. The act is booked into a burlesque house. And we know now that vaudeville is dead. Rose is appalled and they want to leave, but they're broke and they have no money. And Louise convinces her to stay. They'll do the act for 2 weeks and then that'll be it. Rose and Herbie will finally get married. They will finally be a family. Louise can have a farm. It will be wonderful. And it turns out that a star act who's supposed to come into the night to perform on the burlesque stage doesn't show up. And Rose offers Louise up. Louise, who is quiet and awkward. Herbie leaves in a huff because he was expecting to get married and his heart is now ultimately broken. And thus Gypsy Rose Lee, Louise, is born. And so the last several moments of the musical, we see Louise arriving at stardom and owning this power that she has through her body and through her stage presence, which she didn't know she had before. Mm-hmm. And Rose now shunted really far off into the wings. And is there still room for Rose or not? And depending on what version of the musical you've seen, depending on where you fall down on the story, that's kind of the question at the end. Is there still room for Rose? What becomes of Rose?
Mm-hmm.
Does Louise or Gypsy Rose Lee still need her?
Right. And it really does depend on how it's staged.
Correct.
But I think in this version, they're cool at the end.
Yes.
She sings Rose's turn and then they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
How is that for a synopsis?
That was good.
Okay,
that was good. That was comprehensive.
Well,
because it is a very plot-heavy show.
Thick.
This is unlike several shows we've done. This is a show that tells a story, and it tells someone's life story. from when we meet them until their fame. But what's so funny about it to me is that it is based on the biography of Gypsy Rose Lee, but it's about her mother. Yes. It is not, it is, as much as it is Gypsy Rose Lee's story, it is really her mother's story. And it's the story of her mother, who has 90% of the songs, and a lot of those are solos, and all the stage time and all the best lines. And the, I mean, it is a star vehicle for, of course, in this version, Ethel Merman. Mm-hmm. You say that as you got older and it you understood more of it. How has it stuck with you? Like, how has it changed and evolved to, depending on where you are?
I feel about Gypsy the way that I feel actually about Lucy Simon's Secret Garden a little bit, which are two vastly different shows.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk it's okay.
Let's
focus
Secret
on
Garden
Gypsy. There's
day.
So much
That's
here.
Fine. Okay, we'll talk about Gypsy.
So the thing about both of those shows is, as an actor and as an artist, I see that this is a production that I can return to as I age.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I started as Baby Louise.
I will do.
And then we've had years since I was baby.
You're not Mama Rose yet.
I'm not Mama Rose yet. But there are opportunities for Dainty Louise.
If Mama was married, we'd live in a house as private can be. Just Mama, three ducks, five canaries, a mouse, two monkeys, one father, six turtles, and me. If Mama was married.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps one of the strippers.
You can sacrifice your sacro, working in the back row, bump in a dump till you're dead. Kid, you gotta get a gimmick if you want to get ahead.
Or Mama Rose at some point.
I had a dream about you, baby. It's gonna come true, baby. They think that we're through, but baby.
And then, depending on the production, returning to the stripper.
You gotta get a gimmick.
I mean, you could spend a lifetime in this show and have it be sort of your signature signature show that comes along with you. There are so many opportunities. And the music is phenomenal.
Oh, music's amazing. It's a show that, and actually that's happened a lot, where like Bernadette Peters was Baby Louise and then came back and obviously did it in 2003 as Mama Rose. Tony Yazbek, who played Tulsa in the 2008 revival with Patti LuPone and Blair Benanti, he was one of the newsboys in the Tyne Daly revival, which I think was 89.
In the 80s.
So it's something that this has happened with all kinds of people where Gypsy's there, because they don't stop reviving Gypsy is another thing. They just keep, as we say, Ethel Merman, Angela Lansbury, Tyne Daly, Patti LuPone,
Bernadette Peters,
and... Imelda Staunton just did it on the West End. I mean, it is, and there will be another one in 5 years of somebody you go, oh, wow, that's an incredible push.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's certainly a show that you can age with.
There was another thing, too, that kept me coming back to Gypsy as I was growing up on the stage. So as a young musical theater performer, I was a little girl with a very big voice.
Mm.
And I had a manager when I was young who said that I sang like Ethel Merman.
Okay.
And so that stuck with me.
Yeah.
Good, bad, or other.
Right.
And so there are songs from this show that are in my rep book that I have sung appropriately or not at various ages. In college, I needed a jazzy number for my voice lessons. And I brought in Rose's Turn, and my voice teacher was like, what is this? No. Just like, what do you think you're doing?
Well, it's also like 6 minutes long.
It
like
is. It is. But I liked the story that
Well, sure.
It told. I liked the acting exercise.
It's possibly, it's up there with like Ladies Who Lunch as like just one of the best music theater female solos, period.
Yeah.
I mean, even say, yeah.
And I think that song was introduced when they were in out-of-town tryouts. I don't think it was in the original score. I think they wanted to put in a ballet of some sort towards the end because, you know, Jerome Robbins directed and choreographed it.
Right.
And so they didn't have time to, like, figure out a ballet for Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
So Sondheim just sort of, like, whipped out a new song that's a verbal ballet.
Right. That uses
overnight.
A lot of reprises from other numbers and brings it all. Which this show does amazingly well. Okay.
Yes.
So at this point, I'm just going to save this, but I'm just going to have to confess. I think this is the best musical, not ever written, but this is the, this is going to have a lot of qualifiers, but that shouldn't diminish it. This is the best musical of the post-Oklahoma pre-company era, meaning that book musical era that Oklahoma kind of didn't invent but made popular, that lasted up through, you know, Candor and Ebb and Cabaret and but Company in 1970 pretty much just like not destroying it, but being like, there's a new, we can do something different. And this is, to me, as good as it absolutely gets. The book is perfect in a lot of ways, and the score is gorgeous, and the lyrics, of course, are, this is like Sondheim's first really great lyrical work, I think.
If you listen actually to the words in West Side Story, which was a couple of years before Gypsy, the appropriateness for character wasn't quite there yet, but he really nailed it. I agree with you, and I love this show.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Yeah, and it's funny that it's a show about, I mean, he said, I just saw an interview with him in preparation for this, where he talks about why he thinks this is so good.
Oh, tell me.
We all understood what it was about. Julie understood what the style of the music should be, because he was brought up in that atmosphere.
Not burlesque in the
vaudeville.
In the trains.
Vaudeville. Right. No, and he understood burlesque, of course, but the whole idea of the 20s and 30s, that kind of vaudeville music, he understood. We all had, Arthur and I, we and Julie, we had the easiest time. Gypsy was written in 3 months. That is a very short time.
And that just doesn't sound real.
No, it doesn't. And it's remained largely unchanged. Mm-hmm. As it gets revived. Like we say, sometimes you can tweak the ending to be more cynical or less cynical or darker or not so dark. But, you know, people don't revive this and add songs. And there are songs that you can add. There are songs that were cut. Mm-hmm. But nobody does that. Nobody messes with this structurally and doesn't add numbers. They know it just gets revived pretty much as it was in 59. It does have, I will say, one thing I've also complained about on this podcast, though, about musicals from this era is that they have a very long first act and a very short second act. This definitely has that, to be sort of fair to that.
I agree.
There's
with
you. Four songs in the second act, and it's, I didn't notice that until getting ready for this, that, you know, Everything's Coming Up Roses, which, you know, might be the best act one finale, certainly arguably, is... you know, and then you have Together, Wherever We Go, You Gotta Get a Gimmick, and then Rose's Turn. I mean, you have a few reprises in there, but, like, that's pretty much it. So it is a very short second act compared to the first act, which is unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, and I forgot until I was listening to my CD compulsively in preparation to sit down with you today that there's only 16 songs.
Yeah.
16 when six doesn't seem long.
No, not at all. And it's just... It's and a lot of those are revamps.
Yes.
I mean, that's the other thing. You know, you have May We Entertain You gets revamped 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And keeps changing titles. Beautifully, I have to say. Like, that is, you could almost write a whole, like, music theater thesis on Let Me Entertain You.
Yes.
Let me entertain you. Let me make you smile. Let me do a few tricks. Some old and then some new tricks. I'm very versatile. And if you're real good, I'll make you feel good. I want your spirits to climb. Just let me entertain you, and we'll have a real good time. Yes, sir! We'll have a real good time!
And how the lyrics, same lyrics at the beginning as they are when she turns into Gypsy Rosalie and starts stripping to them, and how just the tone and the tempo and now suddenly what she's doing completely changed the meaning.
Let me entertain you. Let me make you smile. Let me do a few tricks, some old and then some new tricks. I'm very versatile. And if you're real good, I'll make you feel good. I want your spirits to climb. So let me entertain you, and we'll have a real good time. Yes, sir, we'll have a real.
Those lyrics suddenly have whole different connotation
and,
to them.
And as an actor, a young actor, it really teaches you the power of words and intention. Mm-hmm. which is very, very cool. Although, you know, one thing that does tickle me about the show to no end is when we first like meet the girls, when they're doing their first big vaudeville number, they're like, extra, extra, hey, look at the headlines. And they're like little newsboys.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And they're little newsboys like on a street in big city USA, let's just call
right.
it New York.
Yeah.
And then when they get a little bit older, they're on a farm.
Right.
But they
they're
say the
singing.
Same extra, extra, hey, look at the head. And then mm-hmm. you fast forward and they're toreadors, right? There's castanets.
Right.
And they still sing extra, right. extra, hey, look at the headline. And it's like, well, that's
yeah.
the number worked.
And
I
it's
guess
would've,
we
would've,
don't
have, well, but it's very... It's very authentic. To it could be lazy. You could sort of feel it as lazy.
Oh no!
But the two things I like about it is that one, it keeps giving you a reference point for mm-hmm. it lets you show how old they are because the people singing it are older each time or different. But the other thing it does is it really reinforces the fact that like that's what people would do. Like mm-hmm. they were just because as you said, Mama Rose keeps making them be. She's Baby June way past the time she's. Should be Baby June, and
yes.
then she's Dainty June, which is not quite the same,
no.
obviously. And even all the way up through, I mean, the farm number, which is just so funny.
with Caroline the cow who sings
yes.
the moose.
Moo, 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 moo. I love that is the... that is so humiliating to... Because Louise is the cow, right?
I'm not, yeah, she's okay. the front end of the cow, though.
Oh,
she's
right.
not the
not
back,
the back
end,
end,
of
end of
the
cow.
That's a very important distinction that Mama Rose makes.
Sell anything. So, well, but how do you feel about Mama Rose? Because what's interesting to me, and that's a huge question, but what's interesting to me is that we have a show that is the, like, that is an amazing character for a woman to play on stage. Mama Rose is, as I say, almost all the songs are hers.
Mm-hmm.
Rose's Turn is just an incredible finale mm-hmm. for this character to sort of break down and build back up on stage again. She's one of the most complicated music theater characters ever
mm-hmm.
and does these wonderfully compulsive things where constantly you're rooting it for her not to do what she's doing. The scene that kills me every time is when they go to the agent's office and the agent says they'll take June without the family.
Yes.
And how Rose just will not, won't hear it. She will not hear of it. And you sort of realize at that point this is all not going to end happily because...
No.
She wants something that's impossible. She and just is from a business standpoint is completely impossible. But it's interesting to me. This is a story based on obviously a real person, but written by three men. And I think every time it's been professionally revived has been directed by a man. Jerome Robbins, Arthur Lawrence, Sam Mendes, Arthur Lawrence
oh.
again, and Jonathan Kent on the West End.
Okay.
So it is a – and I find that – weird, frankly, for want
okay.
of a better term, because not, I mean, obviously it was written in 59, like it was written by men. That's who was writing musicals for the most part, except unless you're Betty Comden,
right.
like at the time. But the fact that it has never been, like that Susan Stroman has never directed Gypsy,
mm-hmm.
at least that I'm aware of.
You should tweet at her.
I should, because she should absolutely direct this show. I'm interested to know what you feel about Mama Rose as somebody who's grown up in the theater and who... You know, is obviously a part that you like. Do you have sympathy for this character or this person?
So I think that Mama Rose is that character that everybody works towards their entire career if they're in musical theater and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the right vocal range, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a mezzo
right.
belter, that's what you aim for. That's what you're working for. Whether you realize it or acknowledge it or not, that's sort of – that's the big shiny top of the mountain role that if you can get to, that can be a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have sympathy for her because the moment as an actor you start to have negative feelings towards a character is the moment that you've sunk the potential for your own performance and the own story that you can tell. As an outsider looking in, right, as an audience member,
yeah.
boy, oh boy, she does a lot of things that just as a human being frustrate me. But as a person, I also get really upset when people who have opinions cannot speak up to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that a lot in Louise. I find Louise a little bit more frustrating than I do Mama Rose because
oh, okay.
you get what you get with Mama Rose. I mean, she doesn't play. She is who she is.
Right.
You know where she's coming from. You know what her objective is. And you are along for that ride. And if you are Louise and you don't want to do it.
Well, there is obviously – Louise obviously has something that draws her on stage because obviously – I mean, her mother can push her all she wants.
Well, I think there's a
But she doesn't leave. Like, June leaves. June takes off. June has had enough. June and leaves. And Louise won't leave and will always do what her mother asks her to do.
Right.
But up to and including the heartbreaking moment at the end of her mother throwing her on stage,
to strip,
which is just, like, horrifying if it's done correctly.
Yes.
And then triumphant when she succeeds in this amazing
and skyrockets.
Turnaround. So obviously, what I'm saying is she obviously has a predilection to be on stage, and the talent, she does actually have it because she eventually does succeed. It's not like she goes on stage and it's a breakdown.
Right.
She goes on stage and she makes it. She sort of takes all the sum of her knowledge and suddenly makes it work for her in a really triumphant way. But she is being pushed. She is being prodded. She is being driven.
I think she does it out of loyalty. I think loyalty is a big thing. I think love for a mother, because you never, ever, ever, ever want to disappoint a parent, particularly somebody who has sacrificed so much for you.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what drives Rose, though, is this sense of abandonment, because Rose Hovick's own mother left her when she was very, very young.
Right.
And so she always felt that sense of not good enough in herself. And then her husbands have subsequently left her. So she's she's a little bit on her own all the time. Mm-hmm. And I do get a sense that – and, boy, maybe I'm, like, reading into this too much. But I do get a sense that if Louise was to leave her, she wouldn't have anyone. Even though Herbie is there, Rose would just completely come undone.
Right.
That there would be nobody left –
Well, because that's why the ending is so interesting, because sometimes Louise does leave her.
Yes.
At the end
She comes back.
Or doesn't. I mean, it depends on how it's staged. It seems like in this production, she does. Louise comes out and they have kind of a moment where, you know, Louise isn't going to let her flounder.
No.
But there have been productions of this that Arthur Lawrence has staged where Rose is alone at the end of that number.
Yeah, they
and
get rid
that's
of the,
just, that's the little scene. Like he wrote it. So, I mean, he cut it from, I think the Angel, I don't know if it's a Lansbury production or the Tyne Daly production, but it is like he just excised it entirely. And Rose is all by herself. And when he did it in 2008 with Patti LuPone and Laura Benanti, the scene was staged in such a way where Rose, again, like they come out and have the scene, but then Laura Benanti leaves her on the stage in a very real, like, I don't need you anymore kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
And she's left. And then they have that great big sign that says Rose always going to flickers out. It's a really like intense moment. And what's so funny about the show, it uses its intermission very effectively to me, where we close with Everything's Coming Up Roses, which is a manic moment.
Yes.
And everybody's kind of like on edge. And then we open with Together Wherever We Go and everybody's fine. Whatever's happened in the last 15 minutes or 2 years or whatever it's been, it's clearly like they're having a good time of it, the three of them as a family, for want of a better term. So there are good times.
Camping in the desert.
Right. We just don't see a lot of the good times. We hear a lot about them, but we don't see too many, except for Mr. Goldstone.
Yeah.
We don't see too many happy moments with that family. So I'm just sort of...
That's a good question, though. What does happiness look like for them?
Well, they don't seem happy to me.
Just in general.
Just in general. Yeah. And I could be, that could just be my interpretation of it. But like the only time you see everybody happy is, to me, is Mr. Goldstone. And then Together Wherever We Go is the other. But you've lost June at that point. I mean, so that's why I mean by everybody. Like the whole, the foursome that is the original family.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I don't have a question here. I'm just sort of talking. I was trying to formulate a question.
So, but then let me ask you a question back. So you said that you think that everybody is happy in Mr. Goldstone.
Yeah, I did say that. Except for Mr. Goldstone, maybe.
Except Louise isn't there.
Ooh.
And it's her birthday.
It is.
They're supposed to be having a birthday party.
Right.
Mama makes a big stink because the hotel or the apartment, I'm not quite sure if they're, whatever.
Well, at the time, those things were too, they're staying in some kind.
Comes in and says, I lent this to so many people and there's animals here and do you have a hot plate going? And there's like 15 kids running around.
Right.
And
they've ordered Chinese food.
And there's Chinese food and she's reheating it and there's a cake and what have you. And everybody is excited to celebrate Louise's birthday. And then Herbie comes in with Mr. Goldstone.
From the Orpheum Circuit.
From the Orpheum Circuit, who's going to get them an audition
for
this big theater in New York City. And they are going to arrive finally. And Mama goes off on Mr. Goldstone, which is a great song. We should come back to it in a second.
It is. Okay.
But Louise leaves the room.
Right.
So there's this cacophony of excitement.
Right.
And Louise isn't there for it because she is not happy.
That's a good point. I didn't think about
her
that.
I mean, her one moment to shine, right? It's
right,
her birthday. It is her day.
Right.
And it is
undercut,
stolen from her.
By June.
Yeah.
By her mother,
yes,
honestly. But by yeah. June in proxy, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So it's really, so there is no moment really where the family of four.
No.
Except for maybe when Herbie first comes on the stage. They're all pretty cool.
Yeah, that's like, pretty.
That's pretty congenial, but it's not like everybody's thrilled.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, let's stick with Mr. Goldstone for a second.
Have an egg roll, Mr. Goldstone. Have a napkin, have a chopstick, have a chair. Have a spare rib, Mr. Goldstone. Any spare rib that I can spare, I'd be glad to share. Have a dish, have a fork, have a fish, have a pork. Put your feet up, feel at home. Have a smoke, have a coke, would you like to a joke. I'll have June recite a poem.
That might be my favorite song.
Really?
Show.
Have an egg roll, Mr. Goldstone? Or
well,
whatever it's called.
Have
it's
a
called
Goldstone, Mr. Egg roll. I like
right.
it because she just gets so out of control.
Yes.
Have a Goldstone, Mr. Egg roll. Tell me any little thing that I can do. Have some fried rice, Mr. Soy sauce. Have a cookie, have a few. What's the matter, Mr. G? Have another pot of tea, Mr. Goldstone. I love you.
Everything gets out of control, and she's so excited. And as a person, when I get very, very excited about things, I'm very verbose. I'm sure you can tell. Mm-hmm. But words start to just sort of leave me, or they get all jumbled or whatever, and it just falls out. And I think that that's really – I think it's a brilliant song.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really – the lyrics are –
yeah.
on point.
They're tumbly, yeah.
They're very tumbly, and it's a – it's not a patter song per se, but
well, it
kind of
becomes
fast.
One.
It, yes.
it becomes. It doesn't start out. It's, and it's really great with its crescendo. And it starts
yes.
and it's type that starts march as a march and then
yes.
becomes this manic spin into
yeah.
God knows what.
But you sort of feel like you're falling into this vortex with them.
Oh yeah. Well, and also that's a good song in that. I mean, that's the other thing about this show being constructed the way it is you get swept up
yes.
in their excitement, and you see how this can be, this is addictive. Like
yeah.
this, and that Mama Rose is very charismatic for all of her blundering and bust and yelling and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
She is very charismatic. And, you know, especially when you have a parent who is withholding emotionally, you live for those moments of happiness and sort of, and balance. But of course, as we say, everybody, as you pointed out, everybody except Louise is thrilled with Mr. Goldstone.
But it's one of those moments, too, where if you don't know this musical and you don't know what's coming,
mm-hmm.
you think that maybe, just maybe, they've made it and they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And maybe now there will be this end, Rose will calm down and maybe she and Herbie will get, and everybody can eat something more than leftover Chinese food. And,
right.
you know, they can be a family, like a true, more traditional family.
Right.
Whatever that looks like,
exactly right.
For them, and so it's this tiny little kernel of hope.
I remember thinking when I first heard this show, I remember constantly being lost listening to the cast recording without having read the synopsis or anything, and songs like Mr. Goldstone confused the ever living crap out of me because with no context, all you've heard is Ethel Merman sing Some People, Ethel Merman sing Small World, then you get Baby June and her Newsboys, and then it's Mr. Goldstone. And I'm just sort of, I couldn't follow who Ethel Merman was talking to
sure.
at any given moment. So it just sort of felt like I got the vaudeville numbers, I kind of got what was happening with them. But it does sort of feel, just listening to the recording,
mm-hmm.
it's a series of solos, basically. And without context. So, like, if you have Some People, she's singing to her dad because he has a line. And then you have Small World, but she never says Herbie's name in this recording, at any rate.
Correct.
A lot of their subsequent recordings have added more dialogue, I think, just for that reason, to give you a little more following the show. But this is Goddard Lieberstein, so we're not getting, Goddard Lieberstein, so we're not getting dialogue. Yeah, so it was a little hard to follow. So I remember when that song came along, just being like, I don't know what in the world is going on. And I think it's sung in the show by her, like Herbie has lines and ensemble, but like on this recording, it's just Ethel.
And it's honestly hard to tell from the soundtrack. And this is where I start to like teeter on the edge of like, oh, don't disparage the Merman. Her singing is not particularly nuanced on the recording.
No.
So it's very difficult to tell in performance how layered perhaps Rose was and whether Klugman's interjections on the recording are coming from like a real emotionally in the moment place and she's just singing to sing.
Right.
Or if that's how it was on stage, if she's just all brass all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And without the – now, her line readings – we do get a few lines on this recording, which is rare, as I say, for the producer, Goddard yes. Lieberson. But like when she says
– then I'll get it someplace else, but I'll get it and get my kids out.
Like that is – she has – there's force there. There's a delivery mm-hmm. to that line. She's not just reciting words to get to the next verse. But you are right. And I wonder how much of that is just her – she's a recording star. Like that's her whole deal mm-hmm. at that point. So – you know, she knows her way around a recording studio. And I mm-hmm. wonder if it's just like, this is just in the studio. This is what she sounds like. But like you say, on stage, maybe it was a little more subtle. Or maybe
or not.
I don't know. there is not a traditional chorus number
no.
in this show. Mr. Goldstone comes close, but it's two notes or three notes. It's not like a chorus number.
Correct. Yeah. And these people are featured in non-singing roles for the rest of the show, too. They're just kind
right.
of assembled and cobbled for these moments.
Well, and it's why you have, you may not, I'm glad this came back around again. You may not know. Do you know that Sondheim is on this recording?
No.
So during Some People, there's the line.
And all that I need is 88 bucks, Papa. That's what he said, Papa. Only 88 bucks, Papa.
You ain't getting 88 cents from me, Rose.
That's Stephen Sondheim. Because the actor who played the dad wasn't called to the recording because they didn't want to pay him. And he doesn't have anything to sing. Right.
Yeah.
So they didn't bring him. And but it apparently, according to Sondheim, didn't occur to everybody that this was a problem until very late in the recording session. It's an interesting original performance because it's impossible to imitate.
It was made for her.
Right. It was written for her. She's the reason Sondheim didn't write the music, because she didn't want an unknown writing the music.
Well,
and so they had Julie Stein, which was...
But Cole Porter.
Cole Porter turned it down. Frank
Berlin.
Lesser turned it down. Irving Berlin turned it down. And then it got to Sondheim, who mm-hmm. said yes. And then she turned him down.
Yes.
So then he wrote the lyrics for Julie Stein, which I think is the right choice. I think Julie Stein was the right composer for this.
Cast early, cast often, right?
Absolutely. There you go. Right. The problem we often have with star vehicle revivals is that, like, when people do Evita, mm-hmm. you can't help but see and hear Patti LuPone, no matter how anybody performs those songs. It's just, and that is a problem of having these cast albums. Like, that's how we first experienced Evita, so that's where it comes from.
Right.
So I don't care who you are, you appear to be evoking Patti LuPone, because Patti LuPone is leaving it all on the stage
Absolutely.
When she does Evita. Whereas Ethel Merman mm-hmm. and her kind of limited acting range creates a very nice blank slate almost where, like, you can't imitate Ethel Merman. It's not possible without doing an overt imitation of Ethel Merman.
Right.
It's like Kate Smith. Like, you just don't – you either have the voice or you don't, or you're imitating that bit. So when you listen to Angela Lansbury and Tyne Daly and other artists do it, it's them. They're able to create – a character out of this very iconic, I mean, iconic performer.
They have their
performer,
own texture, which is,
right.
which is great.
And bring their own kind of mania to it. And then they're not, and because they all probably first heard it with Ethel Merman, it's mm-hmm. it's a weird kind of compliment, but it is. I think it's a great fortune of this show. But she, I mean, this show was interesting also. And in, like, this is a star role, obviously. This is an award-winning role.
She didn't win.
Well, that's the thing. The general misconception is she's the only one who didn't win for playing Mama Rose on Broadway. It's not true.
No.
Because Bernadette Peters didn't win either. So.
Right.
No, this show was nominated for, I think, 8 Tony Awards mm-hmm. in 1959. Do you know how many it won?
Zero.
It won 0 Tony Awards.
0 Tony Awards.
It won none. It is.
And she lost out to The Sound of Music.
Yes,
Mary
this was
Martin?
The same year as The Sound of Music. So what happened this year, so there was no award for score in 1960.
It wasn't one of the categories.
It was not one of the categories.
Oh.
So Sondheim and Julie Stein were not nominated.
Okay.
Just because it wasn't an award. That year was the five musicals nominated for Best Musical were Sound of Music, Fiorello, Once Upon a Mattress, Take Me Along, and Gypsy. Four of those, actually, you would probably know. Right?
Yes.
Or at least know of. I don't know Take Me Along. Gypsy lost to a tie between Fiorello and Sound of Music. Fiorello won the Pulitzer Prize that year.
I remember
year.
That from an earlier episode
yes,
of
there
the
you
original
go.
Cast.
Sandra Church, who plays Louise, lost to Patricia Neuwe In Sound of Music, who plays the Mother Abbess, who sings Climb Every Mountain. Jack Klugman was nominated. He lost to Tom Bosley in Fiorello because the rules were at the time, this went on for a long, this is a bizarre rule. The Tony Awards used to do lead actor and featured actors by where your name appeared on the poster. If your name was above the title, you were lead actor. If your name was below the title, you were featured actor.
I didn't know that.
That's how it used to be. So Tom Bosley, even though he's playing Fiorello in Fiorello, was listed below, because he wasn't a star, was listed below the title. So he's a featured actor, even though he's the lead in the show. So he beats Jack Klugman.
What a strange rule.
It went on for a long time. It's why William Daniels, who is Mr. Feeney to most people, but played John Adams in 1776, refused his Tony Award because he was nominated for featured actor. But that was an ensemble show, so they listed everybody below the line. They changed it. I don't know when they changed it, but they changed it soon after that because it's dumb. Like, that's a dumb...
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a weird line to draw. So it did. It won no Tony Awards, which still shocks me. I mean, it just is one of an iconic musical and an iconic production. Ran for 700 performances. Was a hit. And the album won the Grammy for Best Musical Cast Album. Unfortunately, it also tied that with Sound of Music. Yeah, I know.
They're so different. They are shockingly different.
Shockingly different shows. And yeah, couldn't be more different. Both based on true stories.
Yes.
About musical people.
Yes.
That's interesting. And Fiorello is a true story, too. I just, that's interesting. Once on This Mattress is not a true story.
That's what they want you to believe.
That's right. It very well could be. It's the true story of how Carol Burnett rose to stardom.
There you go.
Once on This Mattress. What is that? Once upon this mattress. Once upon a mattress. Wait, what am I saying? Once upon a mattress, right?
Once upon a mattress.
Once upon, not this mattress. That's a different show.
That's the mashup of Once on This Island and Once Upon a Mattress, which also would be interesting and a little dark.
Which is, that's Mary Rogers, isn't it?
Yes.
What? So Mary Rogers, Richard Rogers, Oscar Hammerstein, and Stephen Sondheim all had shows nominated for Best Musical in the same year in 1960.
That's a small, incestuous pool.
Right. And it was Hammerstein's last show, because he died soon after that. And it was Sondheim's, like, the beginning. I mean, West Side Story, technically.
Hammerstein convinced Sondheim to do Gypsy.
To do Gypsy. Yeah. And I think that's it. I think that's the end. Mary Rogers and Stephen Sondheim are friends. That's all I've got. That's the end of my thread. That is a funny. Yeah. It's just further proof, though, that awards don't really mean anything. Nice as they are.
Sure.
And super great. They don't really mean anything.
Well, and subsequent productions of Gypsy have done very well.
Oh, very, very well. Yeah. And like I say, everybody except Bernadette Peters has won the Tony Award for Best Actress, because it is an award-winning. My late mentor, Jane Pessy Townsend, often said that there are certain roles that as long as you walk out on the stage and don't fall down, you will get nominated for an award. Because she said this to me when she was up for 2 Helen Hayes Awards for actress and supporting actress in a musical. She had done...
In the same musical?
In the same year. She had done Putting It Together and Pirates. And she was up for each of those. And it was just, we wrote a little thing about it in the school paper. And I asked her about it, and that was her response. She's like, those are award-winning parts. You do those parts, you walk out on stage, you sing it on T, and you don't fall down, and you're going to get nominated for an award. And she didn't win either. She was like, I'm not going to win. So this is, that's a different. And she rattled off. She's like, Sweeney Todd, Mrs. Love. She rattled off all these parts. She's like, you do these, and you do them correctly. They're so well written. You can't screw them up as long as you just do what somebody wrote for you.
Yeah.
And don't make an ass of yourself. And, I mean, clearly Mama Rose is one of those parts. And I think Herbie and Louise are those parts too. If you do them, you do them justice, they will serve you very, very well. And it's interesting that you brought up the idea of whether you have to have sympathy for a character to play them or not. And I always wonder if you need to have sympathy or do you just need to understand? Or is that the same thing to you, do you think? Or are they connected?
I do believe that they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you have to like the
person
that
that's always the question always gets asked. Do you like this person?
And
that's
the wrong question. Oh gosh, that comes up in talkback sessions all the time.
I'm sure it does.
How can you play this character? They're so violent. It's like, well, there's your opinion.
That's right.
I don't have to like the character, but I can't actively dislike, at least while I'm doing the work.
Okay.
Before I'm associated with a project or after I'm associated with a project, those real emotions might show back up.
Okay.
Like, she's just a lunatic, or maybe she's a bad mother, or she's domineering.
Is there a recuperation period for you after a show like that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So this past summer, I had the privilege of performing in Next to Normal at Keegan Theater as Diana Goodman. And I am still in recovery from that show. She got into my head a little bit. And
it's
this
an intense
is a,
part.
I mean, yeah, and this is a show that's going to stick with me for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mental illness component aside, she is a very, very complicated woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of levels that you can delve into, and how far you want to go is entirely up to the actor portraying. So the farther you go, the longer it takes you to sort of climb back out and find who you are again.
Mm-hmm.
And I always joke with my husband, James Finley, who's also an actor in town, that there are certain parts of the characters I play that bleed into me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of reframes who I am as I go forward. So several years ago, I played a Jane Mansfield character.
Okay.
And I went I mean, in our wedding pictures, I'm peroxide bottle blonde because I just went full Marilyn.
Sure.
But my walk got a little vavoomier, and my laugh got a little sillier.
Mm-hmm.
And the character in the play refers to martinis as martoonies. And so, I won't order a vodka dirty martini now. I will order a dirty martini. And that's just sort of part of who I am now to go on. So I think that someone like a Mama Rose sort of sticks with you for a little bit.
I would imagine.
I have to, because you can't watch yourself doing that. You have to be in the moment.
Right.
Right? You can't be above looking down being like, oh, I would have done that. No, just do it differently.
Right.
Just be in that moment and be who you are. So.
But is there a difference in terms of emotional catharsis with a character like, let's contrast for a second, Diana and Mama Rose? Diana ends in a place of at least resolution.
Okay.
So we say not happiness, but is better than when we met her. Okay, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe. We'll say. Maybe.
For the sake of this conversation.
Well, let's say healthier anyway.
Okay.
Possibly happier. Would you buy any of these adjectives?
These are adjectives.
Okay, different. Let me end the sentence, and then you can tell me. So she ends in a certain place.
Yes.
That is different from where she began.
I agree.
Mama Rose ends in a place that I think Mama Rose would say, depending on how you stage it, is potentially worse than where she began.
Yes.
So would you say that even though Diana's journey is certainly more introverted and intense and one of self-discovery and family and obviously pharmaceuticals and mental health, Mama Rose's journey isn't one of self-discovery until it suddenly is, like until the end when she suddenly has this number and really confesses her sins, for want of a better term. Would you find that harder to get over, or do you think that they're kind of equal because the journey's still intense no matter how you get it? You see what I mean?
I understand your question. The look that I just gave you, which plays really well on podcast, was my, like, my brain is firing face. So in a way, yes, I think it is more difficult because the work that you have to do to get Mama Rose to a place where she can make that Rose's turn is a little bit more self-guided.
Okay.
She ignores the clues that come up along the way until she can't ignore it anymore.
Right.
Whereas Diana's journey, there's a lot more input coloring her journey. I mean, you know, there's more of a story there. I mean, there's stories in both.
Well, it's a journey, but it is much more. Next to Normal is much more her journey of discovery.
Well, there's so much more of the family influence and seeing how her action and her actions and her mental illness color everybody else, and taking that in, and how people in Diana's world respond to her even when she's not having these terrible manic moments, right? If somebody is mentally unbalanced, the way that people treat them even when they're not, quote, unwell,
right,
is very different than Mama Rose just being on a rampage all the time.
Right. And it is also, I mean, Next Normal is much more of everybody has their moments of
very much so.
Of happiness, sadness, and stage time. It's a much more shared stage experience
that
than
way.
Gypsy is, where most of the emotional angst or you know, whatever you want to call it, at the end is laid at Mama Rose's door.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't answer your question well. And I realize that there's no good, bad, or other here.
Yeah.
So, okay. Is Rose's catharsis hard? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the short answer to your question. Okay.
Do you think it's a catharsis? I mean, you just said something really interesting a second ago where you said that she makes this Rose's turn. I mean, you took it in this like sideways, because it is kind of a funny, it just occurred to me. It's her turn. Like, that's what she says. When is it my turn? When do I get a turn to myself? But it is also literally a turn. She veers suddenly into the mirror, basically. And
yeah.
She's going to take, and she's going to look and see, why did I do it? What did it get me? I mean, that's the question she asks. And she doesn't, it was funny that, like, I read a synopsis of this online today that sort of said she finishes the show admitting she did it
for herself.
But I don't, do you think that's true? That at the end of the song, she admits that this was... Because to me, the lyric that sticks with me is...
I had a dream. I dreamed it for you, June. It wasn't for me, Herbie. And if it wasn't for me, then where would you be?
And she closes by screaming,
well, someone tell me, when is it my turn? Don't I get a dream for myself? Starting now, it's gonna be my turn. Gangway world, get off of my runway. Starting now, I bat a thousand. This time, boys, I'm taking the vows.
The audience, I think, has a better grasp of Rose at the end of that song than Rose does.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Because I think she says a lot of things that are revealing, but she doesn't hear them as revealing in the same way. Like that switch you just said, you know, I did a dream, I dreamed for you, June. It wasn't for me, Herbie, is a direct refutation of what Herbie has said earlier, that like, you're just doing this for yourself. But then she instantly turns around and goes, and if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be anything, which is a complete refutation, proving Herbie right,
yes,
basically.
Yes, but like, if you think about that even further, she thrust her daughter out into...
Yeah.
The oldest profession on stage, right?
Right. That's true.
So she
the third
took
oldest
this,
profession.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if we want to split hairs, but yeah.
Right, yeah.
But so, I mean, she took this young woman who was loving and sweet and who tried really, really hard and just and wanted so much for her to be loved, mm-hmm. and for her mother to be proud of her. And the only way that she could do that is to go on stage and take off her clothes.
I mean, I know. That's yeah.
awful.
It's pretty rough.
And
but I do really. Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's something... This song is so deep. And the deeper we go, the more...
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly written. It's wonderfully executed. And, like, my serious favorite song
sure.
on the album is Rose's
I don't see
turn.
How it can be anything else.
No.
I mean, I think that whether you... I mean, I say it's like Ladies Who Lunch, but actually... It's not, because I realized... I've seen Company a few times. And the last time I saw Company, I kind of realized that Ladies Who Lunch... is like the to be or not to be of American musical theater.
Okay.
But in the sense that when it starts on stage, everybody leaves the show mentally.
That's true.
Because we've all heard to be or not to be a billion times. So when the actor starts saying it, you go, oh, we're here. And you all kind of sit up mm-hmm. and just, you're for a moment not watching Hamlet anymore. You're
no,
watching.
No, and it also, everything gets very still.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you're also being like, oh, that's the next line. I never knew what the next, you know. as it is, I'm not going to do to be or not to be right now. But then when people, so the same thing happens with Ladies Who Lunch. Because in that show, it's the first time that a woman has stepped forward and sung a song entirely uninterrupted.
Uh-huh.
And the show very much stops. And there's no, I really feel bad for anybody performing that song, because there's just no way you're not going to be, again, as we talked about earlier, compared to Elaine Stritch.
Elaine Stritch,
or
yes.
any of the other, like Patti LuPone,
yes.
any of the other people who have sung this song in cabaret or in the show. You are being held to this standard now. Deborah Monk, like
yes.
all these people are, and there's no way to win. Whereas Rose's turn is like, it's, you know, and Ladies' Lunch is a brilliant song, not to take anything away from its construction, but Rose's turn is a character finally telling you the truth, and you've been dying for her to do that,
mm-hmm.
to just tell me, what are you thinking? Because every single song she has before that, she's selling somebody something.
Yes.
Even herself. She is selling, you know... Papa. She's selling Herbie. She's selling Louise. She's selling Mr. Gold. So she's selling constantly.
Yes.
And now finally there's nobody left to sell.
Well, so she's trying to sell it to herself.
Yes. Yeah. And she and or succeeds or fails, depending on how you want to take it. But it is just she's left in this very unusual place.
Well, she's vulnerable. We don't see her really being vulnerable.
Why did I do it? Why did it get me? Scrapbooks full of me in the background. Give them love, and why does it get you? Why does it get you? One quick look as each of them leaves you. All your life, and why does it get you? Thanks a lot, out with the garbage. They take vows and you're batting zero.
So it is kind of a like, even though she acknowledges she was there, there's no reward. There's
right.
no prize. And I wonder how much that is her actually just sort of realizing that. That like,
yes.
the genuine question of why did I do it is something she's never actually considered until this moment. When there's
yes.
nothing... The real thing is there's nothing left to do.
No.
Because Gypsy Rose Lee is a star.
Well, and even in the scene that leads into Rose's turn, we're in Gypsy's dressing room
mm-hmm.
at Minsky's.
Yeah.
Gypsy has a maid. Mama says, I'll run your bath. Gypsy says, no. Mama says, I'll pull out your dress. Gypsy says, no. Gypsy says she's going to a party. Mama says, they always used to invite me to the parties first.
Right.
I mean, I could keep going, but you're absolutely right. There's a sense of like, there is nothing left.
So what the thing to me, though, is then if the character is left bare on stage, which we love to see, and laid waste, what does this show say about this character? Where are we with this woman at the end? That she did something and she succeeded. I mean, that's the great and that's what makes it, of course, a tragedy, is that she absolutely succeeded. Her child is a star. Is what she sets out to do at the beginning, and she gets what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And as we say, when the gods want to punish us, they answer our prayers. So where is she at the end in this sort of like real emotional way to you? I'm asking you. Like, and ties into that what I was asking you about Next to Normal of saying, is she in a place of lost desperation and loneliness, or is she... I mean, because I don't think we could argue she's better than when we found her. Maybe we could. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. But where do you think she's at the end? Where do you find Rose Hovick at the end of Rose's turn?
I think she's alone, and that's a really scary place for her to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when she was the only adult fighting for her girls, she at least had her girls, and she was fighting for somebody other than herself. I don't think she knows how to fight for herself. And so I think... there is potential for a place of despair.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I agree with you that she's... I don't think that she's any better than where she started.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly... she's not happy.
Right.
She's
it's such an enigmatic
happy.
Place to leave a character, though, is my... this main character.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that question.
Well, I kind of sprung this on you a little bit.
That's
but.
All right. No, that's fine. But this is the thing that's going to keep me up
Answer the
now.
Question, Karen.
Thanks. Can I call you in a week and come back and we can, like, figure this out? I need to go home and, like, character diagram a
okay,
little bit.
Okay, sure, right.
Get a copy of the book and, like, read
no,
it.
We're going to do some improv. Yes and me. Is he good or not?
I don't know.
I don't know
Do
that we're meant
answer?
To know. Well,
this
thing is, I don't know that we're meant to know. I wonder if it's one of... because the reason shows like this get revived over and over and over again is for one of two reasons. Other that they're guaranteed to make money.
Right.
Or that there's something that people want to explore
there's still something
about
more.
This show.
Yeah.
And obviously there are a lot of shows that are both. That get revived, A, because they make a ton of money, but B, they just keep attracting talent because...
yes.
I mean, like South Pacific is one that I think of. Like there's a lot of great parts. There's great parts for all kinds of different people in it.
Yeah.
And like it makes a ton of money every time it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And Gypsy certainly does well. Every revival wins Tony Awards, runs for a while, probably launches a tour, certainly has a cast album that sells. Like, so it's doing its thing. But there is this very interesting and difficult to stage finale, you know,
yes.
from the era of what we would call classic musical American musical theater. This woman goes nuts. Great, fine, but. You know, then when we build to that great note, I mean, the great high note and the great push and the great everything and the brass is going.
Mm-hmm.
we still have to do something after that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's nothing, which says its own thing. We can't just put the curtain down.
Well, but this is a musical that does, and it's sort of Buck's tradition at this point, too, because there's no closing ensemble number.
Right.
We have Rose, who I think we're agreeing is a bit unresolved.
Just a little, yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
She exits through the stage door and blackout and curtain call.
Right. And it's just, I would love to see the show without a curtain call.
I would just absolutely.
I wish.
Oh, those poor confused audience members. I know, so they wouldn't know what to do with themselves.
Oh, but you know, I love that. Just bring up the lights. No, bring up the house lights, open the doors, and just, you're out.
And everything's coming up Rose. Everything's coming up Rose. Everything's coming up Rose. This time for me. For me. For me. For me. For me. For me.
So do you still listen? But I mean, this was unequivocally the show you wanted to do.
Yes. You reached out to me and I think within 3 minutes I wrote back.
You said,
and I was like,
oh,
no,
Gypsy.
I want to do
yeah.
Gypsy.
So is this something that you come back to?
Yes.
A lot and over and over again?
Yes. So I have a CD player in my car. We have no CD player
sure.
in our house. I have the album
okay.
on CD. And I have CD books at some point
sure.
in my 20s. I got mm-hmm. rid of all the jewel cases and I put all the liner
oh,
notes.
Oh, you're one of those.
I did. I put everything in a... In
my
like
wife
a,
was one of those. Yeah.
And but I do have all the liner notes. They're all... I have a different book for musicals. I have a different book for classical music. I have a different book for pop. Like
nice.
I, and,
okay.
And my pop stuff, I have two massive... CD books and they're
like
alphabetized.
75 holders.
Oh
nice.
My gosh. Yeah. It's just, into my level of type A-ness.
Sure.
I'm also a Virgo, so everything is explained. But this CD lives in the pocket behind the passenger seat of my car.
Okay.
So when
so
it's
you can
not
get it whenever
in
you need it.
When it's not in the player, I can reach and get it when I'm driving and listen to it without having to like click, 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 scroll
right.
through the iPod to find it or
gotcha.
Any of those things. I can just, you know.
So it's fair to say you listen to it.
I do.
Quite
I listen
a bit.
To it a lot.
Wow.
I listen to it a lot.
That's amazing.
There's also something, it's good. Ethel Merman is like good pump up music.
Mm hmm.
And I have been. Trying recently to get back into musical theater and to audition for more musicals
mm-hmm.
and having had the fortune of having a career in DC stages doing predominantly straight plays,
mm-hmm.
I have to introduce myself to people as a musical performer. So, you know, you don't want to belt your face off to Everything's Coming Up Roses when you're going to audition for a song, but like you can sing it quietly as a warm up in the car. That's fine. It's also really good sitting in traffic music because
mm-hmm.
I can just my brain can focus on the traffic ahead of me, but I can
mm-hmm.
also I know all of the words,
mm-hmm.
I know every cadence. You know, it's just it's something
very singable.
That's comfortable.
I mean, it's very
yeah. I was very fortunate growing up in theater and doing theater from a young age to not have stage parents like Mama Rose.
I didn't want to ask, so I'm glad you brought
it. Oh, yeah. No. My parents were amazing, and I was so lucky. I was so lucky to come from a family that was supportive of arts. And when I wanted to study theater in college, there was no objection. There was just, you know, that's great, and we can make that happen for you. Please just make sure you take classes that are a little bit harder,
mm-hmm.
You know, a harder science or a harder history or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that way, when you graduate, you have other things that you can also rely on to subsidize your theater career.
Right. Well, this is great, Carrie.
Thank you so much.
You are
me.
The first person I met because of this show, entirely because of this show. And at this point, we do have to recognize Heather Hurley.
Yes.
Who is the reason that I met you in the first place, who I have also have to point out I have never met her in person.
She's great.
I have told her she can be on the original cast.
She should.
Whenever she wants, and she has not taken me up on it yet. So now I'm going to make sure this is in the show.
Yes.
So this is a call. Heather, I love you. Come on the show. I would love to meet you in person. I only know Heather through Twitter. I don't remember how we started following each other, but she has been wonderful on Twitter and is a great appreciator of all things theater and comedy and film and all that. And I love talking to those people about
shows.
She's
whip smart. You'll have such a great time.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And all of her trivia knowledge that I know she possesses. What have you got coming up and how can people find you?
I am on Twitter at Carrie Ginsburg, K-A-R-I-G-I-N-S-B-U-R-G. I'm also on Instagram. I think it's the same handle. I'm on Facebook. I have a website, www.carrieginsburg.com. I also write a blog about my dogs, peanutbutterandcheese.net.
Yes, you do.
We're on a bit of a hiatus right now, but we'll be back soon. We've got more adventures to come. But coming up, I'm playing Beatrice in Much Ado About Nothing at Next Stop Theater this winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be Regan in King Lear with WOCF on board.
So oh, cool.
That'll be in the springtime.
Oh, very cool.
So I'm having a very classical 2017.
I have heard this show referred to as the King Lear of the American Music Theater.
Yes, I have heard that too.
It works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It works really well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Look, it all comes back to Gypsy.
It does. It all comes back to Gypsy. The original cast was recorded at the Media Production Center at American University. Special thanks to Jeffrey Madison, Tom Fish, Imani Mular, and the tireless staff of students who run the front desk. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at OriginalCastPod. You can follow me, Patrick Flynn, on Twitter at UnknownPenguin. You can email us at OriginalCastPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Subscribe to The Original Cast on iTunes, and while you're there, please leave us a comment and a rating so other people can find the show. My thanks to Carrie Ginsburg for coming down and talking to me today. I'm Patrick Flynn, and I have rehearsal.